The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Hey guys, sports betting season is in full force. NHL and NBA playoffs, we enjoyed those, and now football season is here. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BetUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. US, you can receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using the bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses also. BetUS is known as America's favorite sports book for a lot of reasons. No matter what the season, BetUS has all the games, NBA, NHL, team, player props, loads of NFL and college plays, whether futures or individual game odds. You can bet UFC matches and props, PGA golf, and round matchups and live betting on most sports, including golf. The online casino has hundreds of games, and the racebook has all your horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable, and the Sharp BetUS mobile platform is easy with full betting options. Follow my lead and partner with a sports betting company with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Alabama is beatable. And it's not quite the great news it seems. Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. And yeah, Alabama is beatable. Now, I don't know if I would have used that exact word last week because I didn't think Alabama would have to play defense in the final couple of minutes from, you know, inside the 3-yard line to secure at least not going to overtime. I didn't think that was going to happen. But last week, I said, and by the way, this is not me saying, hey, Kingstradamus here. Last week, I think every reference I made to that game was, hey, Florida can win. Absolutely, Florida can win this game. Now, let's discover. It wasn't, and I'm going to tell you why. It was, okay, let's discover why. Anybody? Bueller? Anyone? I knew Florida could win. I wasn't locked in on anything, and I thought that any sort of route to it involved AR-15 averaging about 37 yards a carry. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not making that up. That about 37 yards a carry would do it for me. Well, that's not how it unfolded, because this wasn't a superhuman effort by any individual, not one Florida player. There were some good, like Malik Davis. Wow. I think he ran for 80 yards. And against, I'm like, wow. So it wasn't necessary. And Emory Jones, perfect example. Boy, was he, Malik Davis ran for 86. I was going short the kid, you know, 18 feet. Emory Jones, far from perfect and awesome. That's why I say, just looking at the numbers, somebody who didn't watch that game is going to look at Emory Jones and go, well, he was okay. No, Emory was fantastic. He was dropped in a wood chipper. And that, and he, you know what he did? He made it to the end of the round. The start of that game, if you're an old school boxing fan, Mike Tyson, bell used to ring, and he would like have a starter's block in his corner and just sprint across the ring and just, Emory was on the ropes. He made it to the end of the round. And then he made some plays, and then Florida's down by two, and it's like, hey, let's try to win this ball game. But this wasn't necessarily about individual great all-time games by a Florida kid. It's about some really tough, gritty play by a talented team that's well-coached. And Emory showed more in that than he certainly did in Tampa or in the opener. Emory, I got you. That wasn't the story. The story to me is Alabama's beatable. Now, when I say it's not quite the great news it seems, because everybody is beatable, more beatable than your program. All right, somebody raise your hand. Who is a Missouri fan? Oh, Don, you're a Missouri fan. Don's out there listening somewhere. Says, yeah, Mizzou, go Tigers. Don, your program is more beatable, all things equal, than they were last year or 5 years ago or 100 years ago. How is that possible? Because even the most buttoned up, and that's a phrase. We all know what that phrase means, don't we? Man, that program, that team, that's buttoned up. You know what it means. Absolutely. Even the most buttoned up 33rd franchise-looking college programs, even those teams are going to look raggedy at times. Why? Because of portal-based roster turnover. And this week it was Alabama leading the way among the buttoned up to look a little raggedy. Now, I use that word because when you give up 245 on the ground and four touchdowns, yeah, for Bama, that's raggedy. Do you know what? I bet you Nick Saban, there's a Bama fan listening right now going, middle finger to you, Oliver. I hope you're not, because, you know, I ain't with you. I ain't again you. I just observe. I'm the mall cop. I just observe. And I, you know, when it comes to news, I am not in manufacturing. I'm in retail. So I didn't give up the 245 and the four touchdowns to some good tough backs, but not overly dynamic. I didn't even see. Did I see Bowman or Ling? Anyway, for Bama, that's raggedy. And Bama's inconsistent running game, sometimes non-existent running game. Raggedy. Bama, for Bama, where their bar is set and their expectations and their wants and goals and everything around that program is not about, hey, we hope we get a 13th game. That's Clark Lee. He wants a 13th game. And Alabama, they want a 15th game that they win. I mean, look, Bobby Johnson, I interviewed him at Media Days after Vanderbilt went to whatever bowl game it was with Bobby. I think it was the Music City Bowl, and they didn't even get to make a trip. Man, I think. Maybe it was Memphis. He had an ashtray on his finger that he couldn't show me fast enough, and I was like, I don't think they won that game. I don't think. But it didn't matter if they did or not. It didn't matter. Bama, they want the 15th game that they win. And for them, they look raggedy, and so did Oregon. So did Ohio State. So did OU. There's one exception. Georgia. Georgia hasn't really looked raggedy yet. We will discuss the Bulldogs, their victory over the weekend at home against South Carolina. That is next on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Catch the King. king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
We turn 7 years old this week. So put a candle on the cake. We started beginning of the 2014 season, so I appreciate everybody making this blessing possible. 9 states, 54 sticks, dealing it out 2 hours a day, so thank you all for that. Ain't nothing a coach likes more than winning a game, so that's where we're going to start. But I got to have something to complain about, and they have to believe me. And when you played Abilene Christian or whomever, they're not going to believe any of your criticism. If you played Nickel State at home and had to survive in the final minute, they may believe you. But in most cases, they're not going to believe you can blow out the team. Kirby Smart has enough to complain about that his team will believe him. And that's because that phrase, you know, penalties and turnovers will kill you. No, penalties won't kill you. Penalties are an annoyance to me if they're pre-snap. Turnovers will kill you, and Georgia had some of those. Other than that, Georgia is the only team with a legitimate shot to win a national championship that I have not seen look raggedy this year. I really have not. Say what you will about Clemson, but Clemson's defense ain't raggedy. Clemson's defense is maybe the second best in America. So Georgia is in that club right now by themselves. A guy who does a great job covering the Georgia Bulldogs and has covered the Gamecocks as well in his past from The Athletic. It is Seth Emerson. Seth, brother, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Chuck. How are you? And don't sleep on Abilene Christian this year. They're not bad. They got good offensive line.
You know what? You just sold that enough. Let's talk Georgia and what Kirby would have to complain about. I was making a point before you came on that due to the transfer portal, it's going to be normal for even the most buttoned-up professional squad-looking programs to look a little raggedy because there's just – I mean, you turn over 50 players in a year, it's going to happen. Georgia really has not looked raggedy. What is Kirby's real complaint 3 games in?
I think it depends on whether he's talking publicly, like he will in about 45 minutes, in which case he'll probably talk about details and penalties and turnovers and those kind of things, and whether he's talking about it like privately, whether you give him truth serum, in which case he may talk about the offensive line, which is kind of where we were, like, I think in August when I looked at this team, I felt like the secondary had been shored up. I know they gave up some long passes to South Carolina, but honestly, they did that last year when they had a first round and a second round quarter. Mm-hmm. It's just going to happen in college football. But Georgia with its pass rush has a good chance to mitigate that, and you make up for it with a good offense, which Georgia has. The question is whether their offensive line, which has definitely been good enough to get them to this point, will be able to be good enough to avoid a loss between now and the SEC championship and then win them the SEC championship. And I don't know for sure whether it will be.
All right, well, let's talk about that because, I mean, you hit on one of the two, and I've said this since I've been on the air 20-plus years. O-line, secondary, no two position groups evolve over a season more than those two. Give me the individual then. Drill down, Seth. Who's the individual with the blue sky there, like that we're going to look in, you know, before the Georgia Tech game and go, oh, my gosh, he's so much better than he was in September. Who is that guy?
Would have been Tate Radledge, but he's – out for the yep. season with an injury. So that sets up the issue. Now, I have been wondering, some would say lobbying, whether they should bite the bullet, move Jamari Sawyer from left tackle to inside somewhere, left guard or right guard, and then put in an inexperienced but high upside guy like Broderick Jones. Marius Mims, not there yet, true freshman. Xavier Truss started against Cincinnati in the Peach Bowl. Didn't have a good game, but still a redshirt sophomore, still
tough opponent.
Pretty good size, high upside, yeah. So they haven't done that. And they were better against South Carolina. They were better running the ball. They gave up one sack where South Carolina pulled a stunt on Sawyer on the left, which is going to happen, but then Warren Erickson at right guard just got straight up beat. But the running game was consistent, so you could argue, hey, they're going in the right direction, and this is what they're going to have. But, like, look, Chuck, I'm one of those guys that I say stars matter, recruiting stars matter, but sometimes you get a Jordan Davis. Sometimes you get a Donai Mitchell or, you know, Brock Bowers even. Like, do you realize that he was not a top 100 recruit?
Oh, yeah.
He was.
I looked at that last week. I think he was the 13th ranked recruit in that class at Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. And meanwhile, he just comes in and he plays. I mean, but on the O-line, they've got in Justin Schaefer and Warren Erickson at the guards, two guys who were not very – you know, they weren't five stars, the kind – they weren't top 100 guys the way they've recruited around here. So you do wonder whether they have missed an opportunity, and I don't know. I mean, they have Vanderbilt Saturday, but they might be beyond the point of doing this where, you know, you plug in – you put in a Broderick Jones or a Xavier Truss and say, this isn't going to be as good right away, but by the time of the Florida game – by the time of whatever comes after that, this is going to be our best lineup. They're not there. They haven't done that. I don't know that they will.
Do you think – I was about to ask you, do you think Kirby has it in him to think about anything that the coming game that is inside a fishbowl in his vision? Kirby doesn't strike me as someone who's going to slow play a season and use opponents to try to develop something for, you know, November. That I may be 1,000% wrong on that, but I mean, there is a philosophy among coaches: win today's game, and Kirby is about that. And that's been my observation.
Yeah, he is somewhere between us and, you know, realistic and the absolute, like, every game is losable kind of guy, which, you know, I think the question was there that opportunity to do something like that? Has there been any game so far that he's looked at and said, well, you know, this could be the time to do it? Vanderbilt maybe did. Charleston Southern late in the season could be that. But he didn't look at UAB that way because UAB won Conference USA last year. Mm-hmm. He didn't look at South Carolina that way because he's played South Carolina. You know, he's been – he was there in 2019, and he had Will Muschamp in his ear saying, hey, I recruited some pretty good players over there. So, look, Vanderbilt went to Colorado State and won. So, you know, maybe he's got Mike Bobo in his ear now saying, hey, you know, don't sleep on Vanderbilt. So I don't know. I still think that that they would be better off doing something for the future. But he apparently is not.
I want to ask you about one guy on defense, and I may be the only guy asking about him, but I have a little bit of a memory. If I am correct, Robert Beal Jr. may have been the number one ranked defensive player coming out of high school. He might have been, or maybe in Georgia, and then he went to IMG, if I'm remembering. Is there a chance – clear up that confusion, first of all. Is there a chance that he can still develop into a guy? Because so far he's just been kind of up in Athens on scholarship, hadn't he? Seth! Dan! All right, we're going to get him. I want to know I'm trying to remember. I think Robert Beal, and by the way, he's an edge guy. He may be a defensive end. He may be an outside linebacker. But as I recall, he was the number one ranked, maybe defensive recruit in America. Seth, are you back from the other side?
I'm here. Sorry.
Tell me what was Robert – we got about 60 seconds left. Robert Beal coming out of high school might have been the number one ranked defensive player in America, and he has not really emerged yet. Is there a chance that that could happen?
I don't know that Beal was that high. I think he was a four-star guy.
Okay.
Top 100, maybe we're mixing. Georgia recruits so many five-stars.
I'm probably thinking Nolan Smith then. Never mind.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Nolan Smith, which he's turning into that guy. But Robert Beal was rated fairly high, and he's a coach's dream because he stuck around. He did briefly go in the transfer portal during bowl season, I think the same season that Justin Fields transferred.
Oh, yeah.
The same bowl. But he stuck around, and he's playing now. Now, he's still behind Adam Anderson and Nolan Smith, the aforementioned Smith, but he's playing, and so, yeah, Kirby Smart loves him for sticking around.
I got to tell you, if you would have said, you know, he's still behind a couple of guys, and then you said Nolan Smith and Adam Anderson, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. So you could be the third best on Georgia's depth chart and, like, I don't know, you know, one of the best in the entire East Division. Seth, I appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, Seth Emerson again from The Athletic there. Yeah, it was Nolan Smith was the IMG guy, and I mean, maybe Bill went down there as well, but I guess that kind of is its own point, that they all do sort of blend together, not for a Georgia fan. Somebody was yelling, nope, that wasn't him, that was Nolan Smith. But Beal is this long-looking edge guy that has just kind of been there, and he plays some, but not when anything's on the line, and there is still the opportunity for him to have sort of an end of the rainbow. Like I said, it has not happened yet, but he still has his opportunity. And again, he stayed, and so he's going to get on the field at least some.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
College football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Clemson got big issues on offense. It is Chuck Oliver show on a Monday. You understand, or you can at least explain why. You don't like it if you're a Clemson fan or Dabo, but you can explain why Charlotte was Charlotte. Well, my gosh, look at them. I mean, Jordan Davis walking out of the ocean scaring Japanese people. All right, that's his, you know, I mean, it's impossible. I don't know who's going to crack that code. And Clemson certainly didn't. And so the offense wasn't good. You played South Carolina. I mean, what South Carolina State is, if you look at the Clemson schedule this year, opened in Charlotte. It was what it was against Georgia. The next brand of Bulldogs, South Carolina State. Again, I don't know what you really find out and confirm there, but you played them at home and you did kind of what you were supposed to. Georgia Tech is very not good. Now, they're a little salty on defense. They are, and they're better than they, but they're still, as a team, they're very not good. And Clemson's offense struggled against Tech. So there's issues to figure out, and I think it starts with the offensive line and a group that would be fine in almost every other ACC locale, but there's a lot going on in Clemson right now that is not up to Clemson par. I want to welcome on right now morning show host on 105.5 The Roar yonder in Clemson. It is William Quackenbush. William, how you doing, brother?
Well, Chuck, I was good until you stopped with four. I don't know if you said bad four times or very four times. I thought my Clemson's offense, I would have gone 8, 9, or 10 because that's the way we feel up here today.
What's going on with the offense? Again, my guess was let's start at the offensive line and work out from there. You don't get better by not having Trevor and Travis Etienne, but I mean, my gosh, nobody's replaced talent like Clemson most recently. So answer for me why after three games the offense looks like this.
Well, it's like playing whack-a-mole. That's the best way I can describe it, where basically all the moles are up at once, and you whack one in the head, and then as soon as you take the hammer off, that one returns, and you basically are just knocking, you know, you're knocking out one problem out of 12 at a time. They can't get all 11 guys to execute on a given play. You know, there were moments where you could point out just the naked eye. If you knew what you were looking at, you could point out just egregious miscues in one aspect or another multiple times on the field against Georgia Tech on Saturday. Offensive linemen, particularly young offensive linemen, just totally blowing assignments, missing blocks. I think Clemson has a major problem blocking on the edge right now. The receivers just don't have a whole lot of fight. I mean, I've said before the game many times that you're not going to be able to throw it deep against Georgia Tech unless you can run the ball, because the secondary is the strength of the football team. You know, Thomas and Swilling, like, those guys can play. The linebacker Thomas had a great game as well for Tech. Carpenter, I think, had 13 tackles. So they had some guys that made plays, and I really thought they came in and did a smart thing. And it's a thing that good, either undermanned or, I guess coaches that know that they've got to do something crazy to win the game do. They totally scrapped their defensive game plan, and they did it in such a way that makes Clemson snap the ball 8, 9, or 10 times just to get the ball in scoring range. If you're Clemson, the fact that you can't take that and say, okay, if you're going to give us a 5-man box, if you're going to give us a 6-man box, if you're going to give us 3-down linemen, then what we're going to do is we're going to play bully ball and push you around, and we're going to run the ball basically because you're telling us we can, and we're going to score that way. Instead, Clemson's not able to blow them off the ball with a 5-man box. They're not able to get more than 5 or 6 yards at a time against a really light box and against the defensive front that still lacks beef and lacks athleticism at Georgia Tech. I do give Georgia Tech a lot of credit for what happened on Saturday, because I think they also finally played the best quarterback, because Jordan Yates is a much better player than Jeff Sims. He doesn't have the upside maybe, but his savvy in the offense I think was good, and he kept Clemson's offense on the sideline. I mean, look, I think Clemson only had 8 possessions in the game because Tech was able to keep drives alive, and I think Yates was a big part of that. So I do give Georgia Tech a lot of credit for what happened Saturday, but that's irrespective of the struggles that Clemson's had now 3 games running of even attempting to draw explosive plays. And I think that's the biggest issue. It's not that they haven't had explosive plays as much as they've really not even tried, and they've been fairly passive in trying to, just kind of let the defense dictate what they're going to do offensively.
Talk James Skalski a little bit. I'm trying to remember, and you and I may have mentioned this, but I think he was one of the guys in the summer. I was like, dang, he's one of those 6-year guys, those super seniors. Am I right about that? Man, what a smart ball player.
Yes, for sure. He's a 6-year guy. He and Nolan Turner, who just made a season last week, they're both 6-year guys. And, I mean, Skalski is, I think, coach on the field is a little bit it can be a way to sort of lightly ding a guy's athleticism or whatever, or maybe just to talk about how old a guy is. But he really is an extension of their Venables on the field. And particularly with Venables, he gets the calls in so late. You've got to have somebody receiving those calls and communicating quickly. And there were several opportunities on Saturday where if he's not out there telling guys where to be, like physically moving bodies, switching sides when the call comes in from the sidelines late after Georgia Tech lines up, Clemson might get gassed for a big play. You don't know, but he's able to get guys in position. He's trusted. He was definitely gassed at the end of the game, but was able to make the final tackle. He kind of got dinged. I don't know exactly what his status is, but he kind of got dinged on the last play when he made the tackle on the shovel pass.
Yeah.
But that was a guy, he made 2 great plays on the final drive, including the one that kind of kept the game from going to overtime. And, he truly is. He's about the best leader that you can ask for on a defense that is older and more experienced than the one that got gassed by Ohio State last year. And they are, every single week now, they are smelling blood in the water, and I think it starts with him.
Wrapping up, William Qualkenbush, again, 105.5 The Roar in Clemson. We've all seen this most recently. I don't know if you saw the week 2, Nebraska played Fordham, and they just ran the ball like 65 times. There was a Fordham linebacker, because that was the offensive approach, that he had 30 tackles. And he just stood there, just boom, but the 6-yard sheriff. That is not what Levante Bentley did the other night, and that was not Georgia Tech's approach. They ran the ball a decent amount, but it wasn't like it was ground chuck. Talk about Levante Bentley, because some of his plays were in space.
Bentley is sort of the guy that probably was the most hosed, for lack of a better way of putting it, by Skalski coming back, because he's a guy that they have loved as a reserve. And they've just been trying to get him on the field because not only Skalski, but Baylen Specter has been a multi-year starter at the weak side linebacker spot and has been a highly productive player, at times the best player on the defense the last 2 or 3 years for Clemson. So then pregame, Spector tries to go. He can't. And so Bentley's pressing the duty at the weak side, and he showed what the folks at Clemson have seen. He's very good charging to the line of scrimmage. I think, though, he's the best sideline-to-sideline true linebacker Clemson's had since possibly Stephon Anthony.
Wow.
I talked to a former Clemson player on Saturday that said he's probably a little better than Anthony in terms of the ability to go sideline-to-sideline from that weak side spot. He could probably play weak side linebacker or that Mike linebacker spot. And it was just a matter of time before he sort of got his feet on the ground and was able to make plays like he did Saturday. And you can probably suggest that if he's not ready to go, Tigers playing just a normal backup at that weak linebacker spot, they may not win the game because he made a lot of plays in the
Stud.
Game. Exactly right.
Brian Brazee, did I see him limping off the field? I didn't think he could break.
You know what? He was limping off the field. He did feel like a mortal man at moments, but there were times where he was just completely unblockable. There's a reason that folks are calling him potentially a small upgraded version of Christian Wilkins. You saw his disruption where he basically – I mean, there was one play where Jahmyr Gibbs, who I have an awful lot of respect for, I think he's a big-time stud in the ACC, he grabbed him with one hand, yep. Stopped him in his tracks, and then freed his other hand from – like it was in lockup. He just kind of pulled it away from the offensive lineman and made the tackle. Brazee, yeah, there are moments where he looks like a mortal man, but for the vast majority of the game, he's an unblockable force, and that's just going to get more and more pronounced as he gets more and more experience.
Yeah, it's like when Drago took that one punch and cut. I was like, whoa, huh? What? No, he can't be cut. William, I always appreciate it, brother. Thanks for making the time today, man.
Thanks, Chuck. Always good to visit with you guys.
All right, again, 105.5 The Roar. Yeah, I was. He was limping off the field. I was like, okay, that's unexpected. And again, no disrespect to Georgia Tech. They don't compare to Clemson. And Jeff Collins, who obviously defensive coach, I mean, his former DC and linebackers before that. But, I mean, he knows what he's spinning over there, and he and his defensive staff, obviously, what they're coming up with. But – It was a quality plan. And it was, you know, that phrase I always talk about, what corner you're going to fight out of? That's what that approach was. It was, we're just going to back away. And we're going to make sure that all those big, tall, fast receivers, everything's in front of us. Now, he's like, why didn't you just, you know, line up and play man ball? Why didn't you play bully ball? You were doing your version of that, which is not really what Clemson does. With Will Shipley, who is a really skilled ball player. He's a true freshman, and he's not really a line it up and just pound it between the tackle sort of guy. But I'm going to say that you called 33 actual run plays. And I'm going to take DJ and his runs and scrambles and anything else out of that. But by the way, DJ he does not want to cross the line of scrimmage. He wants to throw the football. And that affects things a little bit. But Will Shipley got 21 of those other 33 carries, those other rushing attempts. And that's not really the approach again. And he's a good, tough young – he's 18-year-old legs, and they bounce back, and he's going to be just fine. NC State is a threat. Part of it is because of how they play football, and they're tough on the line of scrimmage. Part of it is it's on the road in the conference. And Clemson, now 2-1. But if Clemson was 3-0 and they'd beaten Georgia and look as strong as they ever, I would still say, hey, guys, they're going on the road in the conference. It's always dangerous. Where are they most likely to have an issue? Most likely on the road, whether it's Raleigh or Syracuse or Chapel Hill. What was that? Was that last year or 2 years ago where they had to – 2 years ago they had to escape? Oh, yeah, Sam Howell is a freshman. It's most likely going to be on the road. So appreciate William coming on. We're going to break, come back, wrap up hour one next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Scoreless in the second half. And this ball will be down inside the 10. Excellent coverage on the punt for the Bulldogs. And then did Austin scoop it up on the return? Calvin Austin will take it all the way the other way.
Beth Owens doing a pretty good job there on the Memphis Mississippi State game, because Memphis broke the rules. And she was right in her initial call, and then she was right in her secondary call as well, as the ball was down, and then it was picked up and returned for a 94-yard touchdown, again, as Memphis got the upset. Do you remember last week we were talking about the Maroon Bulldogs, and I said it's a tremendous start. Could have lost to Louisiana Tech. I thought they would to NC State. And I said it's a great start, and you see some, you know, the defense to me is what I really like, but you really need to start at least seeing more signs of the team kind of humming in all phases. And I said, you don't want to have this start and then go give one back to Memphis. You just can't. There's nothing wrong with Memphis. It's a good program, has been for about 10 years, almost 10 years now, since Larry Porter got up out of there. Almost 10 years, been a really good program at its level. It really has been, and it's enough that it can leave whelps on an SEC program, for instance. But that was a Mississippi State program problem overall. That particular play was an officiating issue. And was that an SEC crew as well? I think that was, yeah. And the SEC as well was in the Penn State-Auburn. That was SEC crew. I will say that there's one thing that does not mean more to folks in the SEC office, and that's quality officiating. It's always – now, it's the highest-profile college football conference in America. And so there's always a brighter, shining light shined on it. But it does seem that officiating in the SEC has always been – and I don't want to – it's horrible every week. That's not true. It always seems there are more high-profile and easily correctable issues – than with crews from other conferences. Again, that was an SEC crew up at Penn State. They didn't count. Didn't count. Auburn, for the most part, they got the – there was one controversial play a little later that it was actually the correct call. But the hey, it's fourth down, you got a punt, huh? No, we only ran three plays. Mm-mm. Okay. It's normally very spotty. It has gotten worse. And it's something – see, like Chick-fil-A, I'll give them credit. And they're not a sponsor. They don't advertise. But I'm going to give them – I'm just – we're just folks who are talking. I'm going to give Chick-fil-A credit. Somehow, they have developed, like, scientifically, their R&D department, a magnet for every polite, intelligent, clean teenager – within a vicinity of their Chick-fil-A. Like, every one of them works at Chick-fil-A. Every responsible, friendly, tuck your shirt in, get the order right, 17-year-old. It's not like three of them work at Chick-fil-A, two of them are at Hardee's, one of them's down the street at, you know, they all go to Chick-fil-A. I will give them credit. They figured it out somehow. We're going to employ, for the most part, teenagers and people in their 70s. And we're going to give the best customer service anywhere. Are you kidding me? How does that – so it's possible. The SEC, you've got the hardest thing aced. Hey, how can we have the most leverage? And, you know, we're the conference that you want to be associated with. You want to walk the same side of the street we're walking. You want to sing the song we're singing. How can we? All right, we've got that settled. All right, can we improve officiating? I don't know. I got an idea. Throw money at it. I don't know. Everybody plays by the same rules, different rules in stadiums maybe as far as cowbells. There are no cowbells in the Liberty Bowl, for instance. This is our game. We will eject you. So beyond the conference-to-conference, division-to-division, campus-to-campus, like ground rules, beyond that, same rule book. Raid the other conferences. You want to really tick them off? Now, understand that most of these people, in fact, I would virtually all of them, they do something else during the week. So they're going to fly wherever. The ABA, back when they started in the late 60s and challenged the NBA for not quite a decade. And then the World Football League did it. The USFL did it. One of the strategies that rival leagues take is to just drive up costs, just to remain on the radar of whoever they're trying, whatever mountain they're trying to scale. So they'll hire the other league's officials. And so you have to start increasing the pay, and it gives you one more. Now, don't fight a two-front war. We're giving like a nine-front war. Oh, you want to play games in the playoff committee voting room? All right, well, we're going to hire your 10 best officials. Here, you can have 10 wagers. Every SEC – now, I don't know about – I can't imagine it's like this. Every SEC fan base has two things, a specific – official that hates them and a network that hates them. Now, the funny thing is that it's like three of it. Like every, if you know who TV Teddy is, Teddy Valentine, he's an ACC basketball official. Every fan base in the ACC thinks TV Teddy hates him because, man, is he the star of the show. It can be one versus two in Chapel Hill. Teddy gonna get his time. Everybody thinks he hates. And so I don't know who that would be in the SEC. But the officiating, I would say nobody hates you. Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, LSU, nobody hates you. It's just that the officiating is really, really, really below par of literally everything else to do with the conference. Dan, how are you?
Well, I mean, to kind of add a couple of more points to it is I think, number one, it's a problem of there's no real accountability here. It's everybody looking out for each other, and it's everybody looking out for each other to just maintain the status quo. This is a pretty good gig we've got. Part-time officials in the SEC, Chuck, for example, I saw this from Matt Wyatt on Twitter, $5,000 a game. That's a pretty good gig out there, $60,000 for 6 months, not even 6 months of work, and you're already making more than most people make in an entire year. That's pretty good right there. So I think that that's part of it as well, is you got to break up kind of the, I'll just go ahead and say it, the brotherhood that you have of this and actually make some people scared to not lose their job, because I think that is kind of to a certain point here, Chuck, where we're running into, I can get it wrong, but you know what? It's just a review. Don't worry about it, and then I can go about my business. What about the players who don't get the opportunities because of your mess-ups? What about the coaches who get fired because of your mess-ups on the field? So it obviously affects them. It might not affect you as much. And that's the thing, too, is I think the other part of it as well, Chuck, I'm just going to go ahead and say this, and you can say I'm an ageist, whatever. There are too many guys on that field who the game is too fast for them, and they honestly don't even know what they're calling anymore at this point. That's the other thing as well. We expect the athletes to be the most in shape and most finely tuned on the field. Why can't we expect that of the people who affect the outcome of the game?
Yeah, and there were two issues on that punt return that I was saying. She got it right both times, that the ball was down and it was a 94-yard punt return. The ball had been touched by a Mississippi State player, and it can still be picked up by the receiving team, and you have the choice at that point. It can go back to where it was touched by the punting team or the result of the play. If the ball is still in play, the official, not only the ball had rolled to a stop, he blew his whistle, waved his arms back and forth. All right, so the ball was dead. Then the Memphis player picked it up. Also, there were two number fours on the field. The guy who returned it, and then also there was a number four way upfield blocking as well. So, two pretty big issues, and Mike Leach is saying, yeah, well, I got to walk that L back to Starkville, don't I? Yeah, you do, Coach. It goes with you. Now, we're going to send you a letter, and we're going to acknowledge. It's not necessarily an apology, even, but we're going to acknowledge that there were, quote, multiple errors made in officiating.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.